Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Now, in speaking of Lions Wire, in the 94-episode history of the podcast, we've only had one other three-man booth, but we're going to double that number today. We got Scott Warhite, who is a new addition to Lions Wire. Welcome aboard, Scott.
Thanks a lot. Longtime friend of the pod.
Well, and it's great to have you here. And tell the folks listening at home or wherever they might be, the subway, what your background is, at least when it comes to being a Lions fan.
Well, longtime Lions fan and follower. I started writing sports columns around town when I was 12 years old. I used to call into WDFN all the time. And they put me on the air, and I got started writing columns for the Oakland Press and the Detroit News, and somehow convinced Justin Rogers to give me a job at MLive, and then Eric brought me out of writer retirement to join the Lions Wire crew. So happy to be on board.
So how long suffering of a Lions fan have you been?
35 years.
All right, and so like what's your do you have a favorite win of all? What about no? You forget about favorite win. Who's your favorite Lions player of all time?
Favorite Lions player. I'm going to go with Herman Moore.
Herman Moore?
I am, and I'm a little biased. I interviewed Herman when I was 12 years old, went down to the Silver Dome and interviewed him, and that was fun. Benny Blades gave me a really hard time in the locker room that day because I think he was wondering what is a 12-year-old kid doing in the locker room. But,
sure.
But that was fun. So, I'm a big Herman fan.
Herman lives in this area, actually. I've run into him at the local corner a time.
He lives near the podcast studio?
Yeah.
Now, Eric, that was the longest you ever went at the beginning of the podcast before you spoke. Let's jump right into it. We're going to talk about one of Scott's articles right off the bat. Matt Patricia's choice of Darrell Bevell was shocking, but shouldn't have been. So who wants to kick us off here? Eric, you want to give us a little background on it?
Yeah, you know, when we did the podcast last week, it was within hours of the announcement, right? So the announcement happened.
We knew it was coming that day.
And so we were able to set up the pod, get it out, and the initial gut reactions were there. And we delivered a lot of that on our last pod. But, you know, now that the dust kind of settled and we get a better look at what he brings to the offense, I think it's given us a whole kind of new avenue of information to talk about that we can spend a little time. And the most obvious one was what the article that Scott wrote, which was we really should have seen this coming, right? And so Scott made some good points in the article, and you know, like why didn't we see it coming? I guess is the good answer, right? The obvious answer was that, you know, he's been out of the league for a year, but when we start looking at what he does, it just really aligns well.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Patricia had talked about they want to be a balanced team, they want to be a versatile team, and they want to be able to run the football. And all of those things are exactly what Darrell Bevell brings to the table. That's what he did in Minnesota, that's what he did in Seattle. He certainly has a reputation, and a well-earned one, of being able to have a very strong running game. Seattle had led the league in rushing on more than one occasion when he was there. Had 172 yards per game in 2014, which is just an absolute incredible number running the football.
That's like four...
That's college numbers.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, what do they average? In order for them to hit 172 yards with the team, let's say even 3 years ago, how many games do you think it would take them to get to 172 yards on the ground?
Two.
At least, yep. Right? At least
two and a half,
maybe? There you go. I mean, he put up some crazy numbers in Seattle.
But Bevell's also, as much as he's known as a run-first coordinator, he's also had some pretty explosive offenses in Seattle as well. Mike Sando of ESPN had put together some numbers over the course of Bevell's tenure in Seattle, and they were third in the NFL in passer rating over that tenure, fourth in explosive plays, fourth in ESPN's QBR rating. So it's not just that he knows how to run the ball, it's also that he can get the most out of his quarterback, and that's what Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia have said. We want to be able to, you know, some games run the ball 30 times, some games throw the ball all over the field, and we want to be able to kind of take advantage of our matchups. And Bevell over the course of his career, he's shown he can do that. So he was sort of somebody that really should have been at the forefront of all of our minds, and really should not have been that big of a surprise that the Lions were interested in.
Yeah, out of sight, out of mind with him, right? But to get back to what you're just pointing to is that when people hear, there's so many people that hear Bevel's name and they hear run first, and so they think that this is just going to be hand the ball off and then just try and run it down their throat, and then that's all they're going to do. When that's really not the case, when you look at Seattle's offenses, and even if you go back to Minnesota's offenses under Bevel, he has a vertical vertical approach to the passing game where he likes to push the ball downfield, he likes to take chances, and for the people that think that this is actually going to negatively impact Matthew Stafford, I would argue the opposite. I think this will actually give him a chance to utilize his best weapon, which is that big arm and those improvisation skills that he has. And I think that if he can get a rhythm going, I think while going into a game, they're going to have that run first mentality and trying to establish the run, establish the ball on the ground. But if Stafford gets rolling, he's proven that he can be dynamic when he gets into a rhythm, and I don't think that this coaching staff will shy away from that. They won't be rigid in trying to stick with something. One of the aspects about Bevel is that he's willing to change up things on the fly, and that's another one of those key things that Bob Quinn pointed to in his post end of season press conference, was he wants that flexibility to do what you were talking about, either run it a lot or pass it a lot or have that balance in between.
And Bevel's certainly somebody I think that can take advantage of different personnel. And I think that's one of the things that attracted him to the Lions, was that he can go and work with the personnel that we have. He's not going to try to shoehorn his own kind of vision onto the players. He's going to take the best of what the Lions players can do and hopefully adjust his offense accordingly.
Now, speaking of personnel, now that we've had a week and a half to let the smoke clear on the hire, how is this going to affect the procurement of new personnel going into this offseason?
I think mainly, and I wrote an article on this at Lions Wire, is from a offensive personnel standpoint, it's going to change the priority. You know, what we've seen in the past with Golden Tate and Marvin Jones and the emergence of Kenny Golladay is that last year we had three receivers that we targeted before another position, like a tight end or a running back. In the years prior, you might have seen two receivers and then the running back and then back to a receiver and the tight end, or vice versa. There was always seemed to be this kind of hierarchy depending on what the situation was from year to year. But with Bevel, it's been a little bit more consistent where they go to their top weapons. In Seattle, when they had Jimmy Graham was their second highest targeted player, right? And as a tight end, if you're capable of playing, then you're going to get those targets. And in the years before that, in the 3 year, so that was 3 years with Jimmy Graham. The year before that, you would think without a Jimmy Graham in the fold, it was actually Luke Wilson was the tight end tight end one for them that year. They went to the running back before they went to the tight end or the third wide receiver. And so there was some variance in how he approaches it. But if you look at like where he's best, the wide receiver three, I think, is going to be the position that suffers the most in Detroit from what we've seen over the last decade. I think the tight end position gets elevated, and with a refocus on the run game, we're going to need a Kerryon Johnson supplement. We're going to need somebody who can come in and give him some relief, make sure he's not being susceptible to extended hits or extended playing time. So I think at this point, a tight end number one and a running back two are going to come in before we see that slot wide receiver be a priority for them.
All right, so tacking on to that, Matt Smith has a question. Does Bevel's arrival in Detroit increase the Lions' chances of re-signing Golden Tate? My guess is, with what you just said, the chances are getting lower.
Yeah, well, what do you think, Scott?
Well, I think you look at it, Golden Tate left Seattle to come to Detroit, so he was right with Darryl Bevel and decided to come and was really much more successful in Detroit than he was in Seattle. He sort of had a renaissance when he was here and outplayed his contract for sure. It ended up being a bargain for Detroit. So would he want to go back and play for Bevel, who he already maybe didn't use him to the best of his abilities the first time around?
Right, and then you add in the fact that according to SpotTrack, he's going to probably demand upwards of 3 years and $30 million, which is what that's a little over $10 million a year according to them. I actually think it's probably numbers gonna be closer to 12. And when you're putting when you're distributing your money as Bob Quinn, it will be, you're not going to want to invest double-digit $1 million into an option that probably might be the fourth or fifth option on your team. Look, this is the big reason why they got rid of Ebron, right? They didn't want to pay Ebron $9 million to be the fourth target in the offense last year. They're not going to want to pay a Golden Tate over $10 million to be, at best, the fourth option in this offense. So I think it hurts Golden's chances of coming back, with one small caveat. There's that little underlying rumor this offseason that the Lions have been shopping Marvin Jones. And while I haven't bought into it, I've been told it by two people, but I think it's really speculative and probably not really on point. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But if for some reason they were willing to move on from Marvin, then that opens Golden's chances back up. But I don't believe that they're looking to I think bringing Golden back would be a really hard – you'd have to have a bunch of dominoes fall in order for that to happen.
All right. Now, tacking on to that point you just made here, we got a question from Eric J. Mawson. Often a new offensive coordinator will want to bring in players he worked with to a new team to help bring his scheme on board, which may not be Golden Tate at this point.
Sure.
Who from Seattle could Bevel target?
This is another article that I wrote up at Lions Wire. I did start with Golden Tate right off the bat, and I did mention a lot of things we talked about, even like with what Scott talked about, where he was part of the system in the past in Seattle, but he left that system. Another name, though, that another former Lion who is also a former Seahawk, who's a guy that might come back, is it's very possible they want to bring back Luke Wilson. Now, I was just making a joke earlier but that Luke Wilson was their tight end one when they went in a different direction. But Luke Wilson, when he wasn't that tight end one, he was their tight end two for a long time under Bevel, and he was actually very successful as a tight end number two under Bevel. If the Lions want to bring him back, I wouldn't be surprised, but he would be very role-specific in being that tight end two. They'd have to have a plan to upgrade from him, like either in the draft or they'd have to sign another free agent in addition to Luke Wilson. But don't get, if this happens, there's going to be a lot of people that get their feathers up and say, man, he was terrible with Detroit last year and he doesn't make any sense. He made sense in Bevel's system. There was a role for him. There's a role for a tight end who can play an H-back role, who can be a blocker and a reliable outlet, occasionally catch maybe a dozen catches a year. There's a role for that. And he did that very well for a while. But, maybe Michael Roberts fills that role because he's also capable of that. But if they bring back Luke Wilson, he's not going to be brought in as their top option. They're still going to be trying to upgrade that position, I think, with a stud one way or another.
What about running back-wise?
You got three options at running back, right? The biggest, you got big names out there like Marshawn Lynch and Adrian Peterson, both free agents, both guys that were very successful under Bevel. Yep. There's that correlation between having a good running offense and then you also have that good, you got to have that good running back, right? I would expect Lynch over Peterson if they were going to target one of those two, even though Lynch is a little bit older, I believe. I think he's 1 year older, right? But
really?
They're both
okay. Yeah, I'll buy that.
But they're both like in that 33-year-old range, right? So
on their last legs as running backs,
it's possible they try to replace the LeGarrette Blount role with a Marshawn Lynch. I don't think you could do that with Peterson. He's got the ego to want to be the top guy, and that's not going to happen here with Kerryon. But the kind of low under the radar guy is Mike Davis, who is currently Seattle's number two. The word on the street there is that they're looking to move on from him because that's why they drafted Rashad Penny in the first round last year. Penny's expected to step into that number one or number two role, which would push Davis down. And then with his contract being up, they're probably not going to bring him back. He has a good 4.6 rush yard average last year, but he's also a very good receiver and a good pass blocker, which is good. He was only with Bevel for one season, but he kind of fits into that role of a guy who can run in this system and is a capable number two that would complement Kerryon. So Mike Davis is a realistic prospect. I don't think you're going to have to break the bank on him. Again, this is a move that people wouldn't be like overly ecstatic about, but it's a smart way to spend your money on a running back in a system that's going to want to utilize multiple at the in the backfield.
Now, you got Mark Glowinski on this list, and that's not the first time I've seen his name tied to the Lions in one way or another.
Yeah.
Now, he played on a very good Colt offensive line last year. Why would they be so willing to get rid of him unless he's going to be too pricey?
Well, I don't think the Colts will get rid of him. That's the first caveat here is. I think he would fit Detroit, what Detroit needs in a lot of ways at right guard. He spent the first few years in the Seattle organization. He's familiar with Bevel. But when he left Seattle, he went to the Colts and then he shined. Now, Colts have $100 million in free agency money. They can pay him way more than Detroit would, which is why I think they'll probably retain him. But he wasn't their starter. He came in as a replacement option, and he might require starter money. And if they don't want to pay him starter money to be a reserve, then it's possible he hits the free agent market. If he does, I think Detroit would be one of the top suitors for him.
All right, we'll move on from that right now. We'll talk about fullback.
Yep.
So Bevel's fullback usage could provide an opportunity for Nick Baudin. I would also say being healthy could also provide opportunity for Nick Baudin.
Sure.
You want to talk about this Max Gerber article?
Yeah, Max. Okay, so we were able to bring in a couple new writers this year at Lions Wire, and we're still in the process of adding at least one more if we can. Scott, obviously, was our first guy that we brought in. Max was another guy that we brought in.
Does that also mean he was your first choice?
I'm not going to say they're like favorites.
I thought maybe you would.
I could drag you into that.
I don't want to cause any trouble here.
I can tell you I talked to Scott in person, which got the ball rolling a little bit faster. Max is in Toledo. He goes to the University of Toledo. And he's a guy I've been in touch with for a while. I just was waiting for the right opportunity to get him away from the site he used to work for, which is a site I'm not really a fan of. So I wanted to get him away from them, give him a spotlight. He wrote a really nice article here on Bowden. He had another article he's written for us as well. He's done a couple nice ones. It's going to be a teacher, so that, again, that rings true to my...
It's right towards your heart.
Yep, exactly. So, and this was a great article. This is talking about how how Bowden has a chance to be more utilized. And the reason I wanted it included in this conversation here is because he's one of these guys that we forget about. You know, we love talking about these rookies and this rookie class and how great it was, and people forget how dominant Bowden was as a blocker. He was the number one fullback in the class last year. We're basically redshirted him with his ACL. So him coming in this year, if his knee is fully healthy, it's like an additional draft pick that we got.
I was going to say, if his knee is fully healthy, that's he can right. back up Joe Dahl quite admirably at fullback.
I like the Dahl thing, but
that's going to go away with the new offensive coordinator.
And this ties into our offseason moves, though, is that we have Nick Ballore, who's a free agent, right? And we saw Joe Dahl step in when Ballore was injured, and Ballore's contract is up. You've got a rookie who you drafted, plus you've seen Joe Dahl do it. I'm starting to wonder if Ballore is long for this roster. Now, one of the things that Max did point out in his article was that when in Seattle, they used multiple fullbacks on the field. They had different roles and different assignments and stuff, so it's not out of the question for Ballore to return, especially with this special team skills. But it's going to be a fun little if you like hard nosed running football, we've got some options for us here.
All right, now I'm going to pull myself away from Erica because we do have a guest.
Yep.
And I'm going to ask him about our next little piece of business we got to talk about here. Lions have hired John Bonamago. They've brought him back. You know, they thought he was out, and we pulled him back in to be the special teams coordinator. Of course, famously fired last year as the Central Michigan head coach after a not-so-great 1-11 record.
1-11 last year, did go to 3 bowl games. They were co-MAC champs in 2015, so he did have some success there. Longtime special teams coach in the NFL, and a lot of teams were interested in bringing him back. He had supposedly drawn some interest from both of our division rivals with Minnesota and Green Bay that also had special teams openings, and obviously he was here for 2 years earlier in his career. So what I find interesting about the Bonamago hiring is what that may mean for Sam Martin. So Martin's a guy guy who has not been the same punter the last couple years that he was early in his career. There's been some talk about whether or not his roster spot may be in jeopardy. Lions could save a couple million dollars off the salary cap if they moved on from him. Ryan Santoso, who we may remember from training camp last year, was brought back on a futures contract. We've seen some rookie punters, Michael Dixon out in Seattle, get drafted and dominate that position. So could the Lions fill the punter role with a little bit less expensive of a player? Bonamago drafted Sam Martin. He was the special teams coach when Martin was first brought in. So maybe that buys Sam Martin an extra year. Maybe Bonamago can get Martin back to where he was.
Back to when he was booming punts.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's got some familiarity there. The other thing was, I was looking up, Devin Fitzsimmons, who kind of took over the role as special teams coach and coordinator when the Lions fired their coach in the middle of the year. Joe Marciano in the middle of the year. Fitzsimmons also worked under Bonamago during Bonamago's first go-around here in Detroit. So some familiarity there as well.
It's also worth noting, though, Bonamago was a special teams coordinator during that terrible shank against Dallas. He might have been named Central Michigan coach by then.
One of the other things that he's got to learn is, you know, he's been in college the last 4 years. The NFL's undergone a pretty big change in special teams last year. They completely changed the rules for kick coverage and kickoffs, and all the other special teams coaches in the league.
Extra points.
They've all had a year to kind of update their blocking schemes and learn how to return kicks without using the wedge and all those types of things. Bonamago is going to have to get up to speed pretty fast because he didn't have to kind of adjust like everybody else did last year.
All right, so last year the Lions finished 12th, according to Rick Goslin in their special teams rankings.
Yeah, Rick Goslin has been doing this, ranking special teams for a long time. He's considered like the guru of special teams rankings.
Everybody in their tiny little niche.
Yeah, well, look, that's how you succeed,
I know special
right?
teams, so I'm going to come up with my own special teams rankings.
Goslin also used to be a big draft guy. I remember one year where he predicted the Lions were going to draft Nick Fairley, and nobody else had that. There you go.
Yep. Behold.
So Goslin has 22 different categories that he uses to rank, which is some of them are very simple and basic, but you know, some of them get a little bit more complex. The cool thing was is that, you know, I think when we step back and we look at this Lions special teams in 2018, we say, my goodness, they were just terrible at the beginning of the year, which is what eventually led to the firing of Marciano, and then they got better under Fitzsimmons. But why didn't Fitzsimmons get promoted? Well, you know, who knows exactly why. Maybe, you know, Bonamago hopefully can add some stability to that. But in Goslin's rankings, it was very – one of the reasons I think they were able to land at 12 was because they finished first in four different categories, which is pretty impressive. Now, block kicks, that's not that, you know, big of a deal. I think there was like six or eight teams that didn't allow a blocked kick, but the Lions were one of them. They didn't allow a block kick, so that puts them at the top of the list. They also were one of only two teams to convert on every extra point in the NFL.
Matt Prater, about that? Also fine snaps by Don Muehlbach.
Yeah, and then holding by Sam Martin, right, as well. So there's a nice little collage of those three guys. The one that I think we all kind of foresaw was the opponent field goal percentage. We were far and away the leaders in that. Only
a lot of that was divine intervention.
Yeah, nine.
Or some sort of curse that we don't know about.
Not sure that's sustainable over the long term.
That is not. But only 67.8% of field goals were converted against the Lions, which is insane. But the one that stood out to me the most was they were the number one team in opponents' starting field position, which they only allowed opponents to start at the 23.8 yard line, which is the lowest in the league.
That's surprising. I mean, I guess like thinking back and watching all the games, like, well, they opponents never really had great field position off of kickoffs against the Lions, but I didn't know they were the best in the league.
That it stood out to me, right? Because if you remember, the first two or three games, they weren't kicking it deep out of the end zone. And we were saying, why are they not kicking it deep? Because these guys are taking it out to the 30. And then they started putting it in the back of the end zone, and they started doing a little bit more, you know, strategy with that. But this fits in to what Scott was talking about with the change in rules. And apparently the Lions have discovered something about how to pin them back on kickoffs. And so hopefully this is like one of these things that Fitzsimmons can integrate with Bonamago and they can continue this, because that's something that will be really key, especially with the offensive and defensive game plans that these the Lions coaches have moving forward.
All right. The Boot Abides has a question, and this question is going to kind of turn our focus a little bit here. We get rather nerdy on the show, get rather deep. Sure. I don't. Eric certainly does. All right. Not saying that I'm not a nerd. It's just that I can't get as deep as Eric does. He's about as deep as they get. But the Boot Abides question is, what do the various coaches on staff do? For example, what are the responsibilities of the offensive defense coordinator, assistant head coach, quality control assistant, etc.? You know, Let's start with the quality coach, the quality quality control assistant, assistant coach. What do those guys do?
It's going to vary, obviously, by coaching staff. But basically, what they're doing is they're doing film preparation and film review. They are they're saying, this is where we're struggling and this is why. And there's a lot of just it's more like a behind the scenes thing rather than a guy who's going to be up there coaching on the field. It's going to be more of that guy that makes that gives the coaches with the bigger paychecks the little tips and pointers on why this is happening or what's going wrong.
I guess also in this question, we really don't have to dig into what a quarterback's coach does. Sure. Or a running back's coach.
Well, you know,
talk about the responsibilities of an offensive coordinator.
Well, the offensive coordinator is responsible for game planning. They're responsible for calling the plays during the game. They're responsible for making adjustments during the game. They're also going to, depending on where they think the weaknesses are, they may be focusing on single position groups. They may be interacting with different coaches. There's a whole big assembly. Like, I do want to go back to the quarterbacks coach for one second. Because with a rookie quarterback, your quarterback's coach is going to be important because you're going to be making adjustments. With a 10-year vet like Stafford, you're not going to be going in there and trying to change his playing style. Again, you're going to be looking at film and you're going to say, You seem to be leaning back a little bit on these passes. That's maybe why you're floating. Or they're also going to be part of it. Again, it's going to be mostly film room stuff. It's how do you prepare for your opponent? How do you work within the blocking schemes? It's going to be very different for a quarterback's coach with a vet than with a rookie.
Peyton Manning, they were just there to receive paychecks.
You know, more or less. Yeah.
Same thing with Tom Brady.
Hold those clipboards, right?
All right. Moving on to it, let's talk about the roster. Should we add in the big one from today that Trevor Bates was arrested in New York?
We can.
So yeah. Let's start with that.
So Bates was in New York, and we're still receiving info on exactly what happened, but the report was that he had a unpaid taxi bill and then was arrested, and then when he was arrested, there was an altercation with the police where he assaulted an officer, causing that officer bodily harm, and the officer had to go to the hospital. And so Bates is, was also sent to the hospital for checks. And so the team issued a statement that said they were aware of the situation. They had not yet talked to Bates, but they were investigating it. And that's where they were at this point. So it's going to be an interesting fallout with Bates.
Yeah, and we got to wait to see what happens when they gather all the information and what the story really is. But yep. Guess is that he's not going to be around for long as a Lion, I would guess.
Yeah, these types of things don't usually end well for the player.
Especially when you're a player that, you know, he's making his role on special teams, and he did that a lot last year. But we've got some other linebackers on the team. Steve Longa,
coming back,
who had torn his, you know, who had been injured last year. He's coming back. That's certainly a role that Longa could easily take on. So, you know, certainly depending on who the Lions had during the rest of the offseason, that could play a large role in that too.
Yep.
All right, speaking of other guys the Lions have added in the offseason, they've signed wide receiver Brandon Riley to a futures contract.
Riley was on the practice squad the last couple weeks during the regular season. They did not give him a futures contract at the time, but they did bring him back once Bevel was hired. And I find the timing of this interesting because it's possible that this is an indicator. Okay, it's one of two things. Either one, it's, hey, they liked what they saw, but not enough to give him a contract at the time, but they think he deserves a shot, so now they're giving it to him. Or two, it could be an indicator of the type of receiver that Bevel is looking for. So Riley is a slot receiver, but he's not your traditional slot receiver. He's almost 6'2", over 200 pounds, and he fits the mold of what they call a big slot, right? He has an outside wide receiver size, but he's quicker, so he plays on the inside as opposed to having like long speed. One of the better examples is the Patriots' Chris Hogan, who will be a free agent this offseason and could be a guy they target in free agency. So it'd be interesting to see if this changes the dynamic on the types of interior receivers they'll be looking for moving forward.
All right. Now we're going to move on to the draft. We'll stop short of the draft and start talking about the All-Star games that are upcoming.
Yeah, so there's last week was the East-West Shrine game. This week is the Senior Bowl. It's actually probably happening right as you'll be listening to this, or maybe you'll listen to this after the Senior Bowl. But Jeff Risden has been there all week. He's got up a lot of cool articles that he's put out at Lions Wire for guys that the Lions have made contact with, the guys that they're interested in. Some of the guys at the Senior Bowl that kind of fit into that slot receiver role that I was just talking about, there's about four of them off the top of my head that I added to this list here that I think will kind of fit that big slot role. One of them being Deebo Samuel from South Carolina. Anthony Johnson from Buffalo is almost the same size as Riley. Terry McLaurin is an Ohio State guy that saw his stock rise this week. And another guy is Jacoby Myers from NC State. Apparently the Lions met with him twice before practices even began in one-on-one interviews. So if they're meeting with him twice, that's usually an indicator that they're pretty severely interested in him. Now, they're going to meet with almost everyone, but a double dip on that is going to be a really good indicator that he's going to be higher on their board than he may be on others. Now, we've been asked in the past about guys that could sneak up around. Myers would be a guy who, if they don't go after like a Chris Hogan in free agency, Myers could be a guy that they want to target maybe on early on day three, add him in as that third slot role, and that he's not going to be a priority target for them, but he's still going to be somebody that's reliable. And one of the cool things about a guy like Myers and some of the other guys on this list too is that they can play inside and outside, right? And that gives the appeal to be able to move guys like Kenny Golladay around and stuff. So if you're watching Senior Bowl, or if you're reading any stuff on Senior Bowl, it seems like the big areas that the Lions were interested in were these receivers, specifically these big slot and regular slot guys, and then the edge rushers, of course, were high on the Lions list down there as well.
Okay, now let's talk about the draft, moving on from the All-Star games. All right. There's a bunch of mock drafts out. Lions Wire has their mock draft out. Yeah. There's some voting that was been going on. That's fun there. On your Twitter, Eric. Go ahead. What do you want to mention?
I will talk. So last year I did these, and they were very well received. So I decided I'd start doing them again this year. I only did six last year during the off season. So now that I decided that I'd start them again, the response was pretty high, so I'm probably going to try and do these a lot more this off season. If I can do them once a week, that'd be great. If not, maybe every other at a minimum here. But what this is a fan driven mock draft. So what I do is I use a FanSpeak, which has a mock draft simulator, and what I do is I pick the Lions and I set up the simulator. And I start the simulator, and they pick seven random guys for the first seven spots, and then they allow me to pick who the Lions would take at pick eight. So I look at who's available, I pick the best four guys, and I put it out on Twitter in a Twitter poll, and I give Lions fans 10 minutes, and I say, vote for who you think the Lions should pick, and then whoever they pick, I then select that guy in the simulator, simulate it to round two. And then I pick another four guys, put it back out on the Twitter poll, and it takes like 2 hours to do the whole thing. But this is completely voted on by fans. I provide the four guys, but it's totally up in the air on who they can take and who's available. But inevitably, it ends up giving a pretty nice collection of players, and it's a good exercise to get to know some of the guys that fit into the Lions system. So I wrote an article. It's out there this morning. I asked Joe not to read it, so I'm going to try and see what Joe thinks he would pick. I know Scott has read it because he was interacting during the Twitter session.
I was voting.
And so I want Scott to weigh in on what he thinks as well. But I want to go through this almost like, you know, as if we were the fans and who we would pick. So in round one, the four options that I gave out there were Ed Oliver, the Houston defensive lineman, Greedy Williams, the LSU corner, Cleland Farrell, the Clemson defensive end, and then Devin White, the LSU linebacker. And Joe, if you're on the clock, those are your four choices. Who would you have voted for?
I guess Cleland Farrell. I want a pass rusher.
Okay.
That was my vote, too, actually. I went with Farrell. It was tough for me because I think Ed Oliver is an incredible player, too, and very versatile on the defensive line, but I went with Farrell.
My guess is Ed Oliver won.
Ed Oliver did win. I would have picked Oliver as well. And that's sometimes why I wonder, with me running these, if I'm almost skewing people.
Oh, you certainly are. I would say that's 100% here.
because I wrote an article a week maybe prior about why I thought Ed Oliver would be a fit and why personally I think Ed Oliver is a better player than the other three. Ed Oliver did win. Believe it or not, he won by a single vote. And
over
Greedy Williams. Farrell didn't even...
Were they choices A and B? Were everybody just clicking A or clicking...
Yeah, this is the order, yeah. I tried not to put my favorite at the top.
No,
I was pretty careful not to do that at different rounds. But Oliver did win over Williams. I know a lot of people really like Williams because... But I think because they want a corner. But I think people are more in love with the idea of a corner. Look, he's 6'2", he's long, he's athletic, he's familiar with press coverage. All these things say they fit in the Lions system sure. like a glove. But he's not what I think people want him to be. He's not they want a top 10 corner who can do that. And I don't think he's a top 10 corner. He has the traits. I just don't think he's ready for that. At least right now. Maybe I gotta go back and look again. But Oliver won. You know, regardless of whether it was Oliver or Farrell, we had the right idea trying to get some pass rush in there. So we've got our pass rusher in the first round. We move on to round two, and now I include some offensive players here. I gave the option of tight end Noah Fant, wide receiver DK Metcalf from Ole Miss, a safety, Nasir Adderley from Delaware, and Alabama linebacker Mack Wilson. So, you got your pass rusher. Where do you want to go?
Now, this is tough for me because I'm really only well-versed in what Noah Fant can do
sure.
from seeing him the most. Although, no, wait, you know what? I have seen a lot of Mack Wilson. We're forced to see a lot of Mack Wilson. We do see a lot of Alabama football.
Sure.
And he would seem to make the most sense for the Lions with how they kind of succeed with Alabama players. I'm going to go Noah Fant, though. I want a tight end.
Okay.
I also want Noah Fant. Joe and I did not compare notes beforehand, but tight end is such a huge need for the Lions. Fant really can be a special player at that position. That's who I would go with.
I'm going to guess... Mack Wilson won the poll.
Noah Fant won the poll with like 83% okay. as well. And again, this is a guy I would have picked. I've also, again, I worry about my skewing because I've been talking about the Lions wanting to take a tight end at two for a while now. And I think it just makes sense. The talent's going to be there. You have Hockenson from Iowa who's going to probably be tight end one. Fant is probably going to be tight end two, also from Iowa. And then Irv Smith,
crazy?
Who we've talked... Yeah, very.
Tight ends two and three off right? the draft board. We played for the same team.
And then Irv Smith, right? We've talked about him.
From Alabama
as the third guy. Now, Irv was there in this round as well, and I would have liked to have put Irv Smith in there, but I was using somebody else's board, so I stuck with their board. So we've got our pass rusher. We got our tight end. So now I gave, again, two offensive players, two defensive players. Devin Singletary, running back from Florida Atlantic, Riley Ridley from Georgia, a slot receiver, TJ Edwards, the Wisconsin linebacker, or Chris Boyd, the Texas cornerback.
All right. Well, I don't like Wisconsin players, so I can't take TJ Edwards. So I'm I'm also gonna pick Riley Ridley.
Yeah.
And I think that's who's also winning the poll. But go ahead, Scott. Who did you pick here?
I picked TJ Edwards. I'm going to stick with the Big Ten. I position a need for the Lions. That's how I went with in this scenario.
I would have went with Ridley, and the Van vote went with Ridley as well.
He's the most known, I would say, on that whole list.
Yeah, and I think
once you get later in the draft, that's what's going to be.
And he's a guy that might not be there at round two pick, much less round three. So after I included him, I thought maybe I shouldn't have because it wasn't really realistic. Plus, we just talked about the slot receiver value going down a little bit. I do like the Edwards. What's interesting is that the fans passed on a linebacker in round two. Linebacker got the second most votes. In round three, linebacker got the second most votes. In round four, linebacker got the second most votes.
It's not a sexy enough position anymore.
So everyone wants a linebacker, but they were just drawn away by the other guys out there. So to finish this draft off, Chris Lindstrom from Boston College was a right guard.
Are you sure it's not Lindstrom?
I know. People are going to get confused if they draft him.
Right.
They're going to start calling him by Nick Lindstrom's correct name.
Correct. They are not related. He is a...
Because they spell and pronounce their names differently.
That's right.
But a lot of people don't realize that. So Scott made the joke.
He probably won't be there in round four, but if he is, he's a plug-and-play right guard. He would be incredible. Then we get to Northern Illinois, Sutton Smith, who's a guy who was played the edge but might even play off the ball. Got your cornerback in round six in Blaze Brown. Then as soon as I offered up a cornerback in Gardner Minshew, everybody went after Gardner.
Well,
in a hurry.
That might be more with great mustache comes great responsibility. All right, like, I don't know if it's necessarily because he's a quarterback.
I'll tell you what, though, he has really good footwork. He's got moxie. He's got a good arm.
Comes out of the air raid.
Got a good name too.
He's got a good name, football name,
and he would be a very ideal candidate for Matthew Stafford. I think he will be high on their list as they go. Lions fans finally took a running back in James Williams, who was Minshew's running back in the air raid system. He had 83 catches, not in his career, in 2018. 83 catches as a running back in 2018.
Yeah, but it's
ludicrous.
It's that Washington State offense.
I know. 200.
It's that leech offense.
That's still crazy. If you're of the mindset that Theo Riddick is overpaid and you want a new Theo Riddick, James Williams is the guy you need to pay attention to. And then they finish it off with John Comiskey, who's a guy from the Ohio area who's an up-and-comer.
Area?
It's
a large area.
Yeah, and he's from the state.
A lot of players from Ohio these days.
But he's a guy who Jeff Risen wrote about, and so I was not surprised
to see. Senior Bowl, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
He's at the Senior Bowl as well. Former quarterback / safety. He was 6'2". 215, didn't get recruited out of college. Now he is 6'5", 285 out of high school. Thank you.
Oh, I read an article about
this guy. I never had a growth spurt like that in college.
Can I tell you, I grew up with a guy who, when we were in freshman in high school, we were both 5'9". I'm sorry, both 5'6". Then we were both 5'7 as sophomores, both 5'8 as juniors, both 5'9 as seniors. Right, and I stopped right around at 5'10". And then he went to college. And when he came back from his first year of college, he was 6'2". And when he came back the next year, he was 6'5".
Wow.
So
the show
it happens.
Very David Robinson-esque.
It's crazy. So I know we're running short on time. Maybe we can pick a free agent question or two that we carried over from last week.
Yeah. All right. So first, Brandon Kerr. Are the Lions in competition now for players for the new coaching staff that is going into Miami?
Yeah, Miami and Tennessee and New England, right? We're all going to have defenses that run similar. So it's not
this
just
New England diaspora,
right? Oh, nice word.
Sorry.
No, it's great. There's going to be a lot of people googling that right now.
Well, that's fine. It's word of the day.
And as these coaches keep falling from this Belichick tree, it just means there's going to be more players that we're probably going to have to compete with.
And my free agent crush is Trey Flowers. And one, will he even get out of New England? They could certainly franchise him.
Yep.
Defensive end, perfect for the Patricia system. also perfect for the Brian Flores system. So,
yeah.
You know, his price tag probably goes up, even if he gets out of New England.
Yeah, because they're probably moving on from Cameron Wake, so there's going to be a need there in Miami.
All right, next up, Patrick Beedie. After they sign their own free agents and draft picks, how much do you project them, being the Lions, to have left under the salary cap, and who are the realistic targets, in your opinion?
Well, the nice thing is Scott wrote a piece on this, right?
I did. I broke up my yellow legal pad and an abacus and tried to come up with exactly how much salary cap the Lions are going to have. And part of that's going to be dependent on what we do with some of our own players. So obviously you have guys like TJ Lang and Glover Quinn who have large cap numbers for next year who may or may not be on the team. So if you assume that the Lions move on from some of those guys, or maybe TJ Lang takes a pay cut in order to stick around, the Lions could have somewhere between $35 and $40 million after they've paid their draft class, after they've signed some of their own free agents, to go out into the real free agent market and to sign some players. And like I just said, Trey Flowers, if he becomes available, would be at the top of my list. We talked earlier in the podcast about running back being a position of need. I would look at Mark Ingram. If he gets out of New Orleans, he's going to be a free agent. Bring him back home potentially. He's somebody that has experience both running the ball, catching the ball out of the backfield in New Orleans, would be a great fit next to Kerryon Johnson. He would be somebody that I would take a look at. And then you got to look at the cornerback position and see, you know, what free agents you might be able to get there, because I think finding somebody across from Darius Slay is going to be a big position to need in the offseason.
Nothing to add there, Eric.
No, I think how much will they spend on their own guys? They'll probably spend $8 or $9 million probably on their own free agents.
That would drag us down to what, $25 million?
No, but
million?
As Scott pointed out, there's going to be guys that retire, and there's going to be other moves that made. So right now we're at 36. You spend $8 or $9 million plus you cut a couple guys retire and stuff, and then you allocate money for your draft class, and I still think they're going to end up being in between that 36 and 40 million or so, even if they are able to retain five or six guys.
All right, Mike Higgs, do you think the Lions will aggressively pursue a high-end defensive end of free agency? Scott would love him to see him get Trey Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Which ones do you actually think will get to free agency?
That's the tricky one, right? Is it's really hard to tell who is going to get there and who's not. Because even with teams that are up against the cap, they're still able to find ways to nail these guys home. You know, big ones are going to be like DeMarcus Lawrence from the Cowboys. He's probably going to end up staying. They're probably going to have to find a long-term deal with him. But like Clowney's going to hit free agency. If Flowers doesn't, he's going to be a big name. Maybe Brandon Graham wants to come back. He's not exactly a great fit, and he's older. But I know
Super
they can
Bowl
make,
hero.
I know they can make it work. Yep, for sure.
And the Eagles have, they're pretty tight up against the salary cap.
Correct.
So that they might not be able to afford him.
Right. And then there's the Kansas City D. Ford. And so there's some really big names out there, but I agree with Scott. I don't know if they're going to spend their money on the defensive end if his name isn't Trey Flowers. I think they would be more than likely to spend their money on a corner. To make this defense hum, you need an established corner. And I don't think, even if they take a corner at 8, I don't think they've got a corner up and running across from Darius Slay that they're confident in. And I think if you add a free agent corner and you add one that you pay for, now you can make this defense hum a little easier. And so I expect them, that's where they're going to put a lot of their money in free agency, is in that corner position.
All right. So Martin Ertz has a question. I'm going to ask it. I think we already know your answer on it, Eric, because of just what you said there. But we want and need to get to the question. What would you think about the Lions going after Frank Clark in free agency?
Scott, you want to take this one first?
I would not. I mean, Frank Clark has been a dominant player for the Seahawks. I went to Michigan at the same time he did. I'm actually very surprised on the field the kind of player he's turned into, because I certainly didn't see that coming. But off the field, he's got a lot of red flags. He was thrown off the Michigan team when he was there for a domestic violence incident, had some other things in his background during his time at Michigan that weren't so great. Given what we've seen from Martha Ford and the Lions over the last few years, I would be very, very surprised if they went after Frank Clark if he became available.
I would be stunned if they went after Frank Clark. Yes.
And I agree with Scott. Like, when he said he is surprised with how much professional success Frank Clark has had. I'm really surprised by it, too, that he really developed into such a good player.
He was so inconsistent at Michigan. You know, there were times where we thought he was going to become that next great defensive end at Michigan, and you certainly saw it in some games. But in other games, he had vanished, and I did not think that he was going to be able to turn into the pro that he did. But even so, those off-field questions, I just don't think you can get around that.
I would take an aging Michigan Brandon Graham over a prime Frank Clark because of his off-the-field issues, regardless of what he's put together on the field, because you don't want that. I mean, look, here's the big thing, is not only did he do it, but he was unapologetic, and he attacked his accuser, not just physically, but verbally and in social media after the fact. He was really just... It's not the type of person that the Lions are going to put into this organization.
Yeah, not typically the type of person Martha would allow to be signed to the team. Now, I personally was very happy with Frank's development at Michigan. It went very well from my perspective. But that doesn't mean I want to be playing for the Lions. So, you know what? I am shocked we made it through all of our material.
Yay.
Yeah, so this was great. We got to have Scott around more often. He keeps us on
I keep you guys on schedule.
Yeah, me and Eric just wander off into the weeds, and I start talking about how I want people to talk more in press conferences for reasons I don't even totally understand. We got a bunch of shout-outs, though, that we're very appreciative for all of them. We have some more one-star reviews, too.
You know what? I've tried... Looking at that, I don't think I have an up-to-date iTunes or whatever, because you said we're up to 120. I'm still stuck at 116. 125? Mine still says 116. So I don't know why that is. I did see three new reviews, and so maybe I'm missing a couple, so maybe you can double-check that while I'm recognizing these fine folks that gave us a review. But I'm stuck at 116.
It's your house. Mine just reverted back to 116. I just looked at it right now. It's 116. It was 125. I sent you a screen grab of the 125.
Strange.
Everybody's sitting there at home listening and just hearing us whine about our number of reviews.
No, it's very strange. It's as inconsistent as Frank Clark was at Michigan.
Yeah.
So
very good.
Robert Trice gave us a nice review. Thank you, Robert. SRK-1 and J. K. Germain. Is that right? Germain? No, Germain would be with... Is it German? Germain?
Germain.
Yeah, okay, good. I didn't know
Germain
if it was supposed to have...
Yeah, it's Germain probably spelled a little differently, though.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so, you know, like last week we were questioning about... You know, we're never really good with these names, but hopefully we're getting them right, and if we do, awesome. If we don't, I apologize.
Yeah, we're
sorry.
Deck us a star for that.
Please. Yeah. But we got... you know, we keep getting these nice reviews. I know Hail Mary told us that she found a way to give us a review on Stitcher. I tried to figure I tried to figure out how, and I tried to look at it, but I couldn't, and I'm not sure why.
You shouldn't be leaving rankings on Stitcher anyways, since you're the host of the show.
No, I wasn't going to rank it. I wanted to see it. I wanted to see how it would
go. I thought you wanted... Oh, I just wanted to see how it worked.
No. But I you know, we always appreciate the word of mouth. We always appreciate the people that take the extra effort to, you know, give us a tweet or send us a nice, you know, a thank you. And it goes a long way with us. And as Joe, you know, points out every week, there's more sharks in the water now. And yep. This helps us stay on top of that.
Helps us stay afloat.
Yep.
Even though sharks don't necessarily... Never mind. We won't get into the biology of that. All right. That's all we got for this week. Scott, once again, thank you for coming on.
Appreciate you guys having me.
All right. And that's great. Everybody enjoy their week. You'll hear from us again soon. And until that time, let's go Lions.